It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
What's up, everybody? OGS is O-U-T. Manchester United have finally ripped the Band-Aid and parted ways with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Chelsea, Man City, and Liverpool pull further away from the pack. Xavi off to a winning start in Barcelona, and Serie A has more twists and turns than a runaway garden hose. That one was just for you, Ray Hudson. Heath Pierce and I will be analyzing a thrilling weekend of European club football. Que golazo weekend recap begins right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Que Golazo, our weekend recap. Heath Pierce in the house with yours truly. If you're watching live on YouTube, I can't emphasize this enough. Smash that like button. Thank you so much for being part of the family. Bring in your questions and your comments. HP and I would love to hear from you. Get in the comment section, share your thoughts, ask a question, and get things off your chest. If you're a Manchester United fan specifically, I want to hear from you as well. And our producer, Des Norris, will throw the best comments on screen. Some of you are listening to this pod form later on. That's very nice. Thank you. Please make sure that you leave a rating and review. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Please take that minute. It really helps us to grow the show. And that's all the call to action. But keep those comments going throughout the show today. Heath Pierce, how are you, my friend? You are not at home. Where are you?
I'm actually in Monterey, California. I was putting on a soccer clinic on Saturday and then Sunday with the Chevron Soccer Academy and Alianza de Football. So we had a clinic yesterday, and then today was a tryout and then a showcase at the end. So a bunch of kids narrowed down, both boys and girls, to a small group that would then have an opportunity to go on a tryout with Sacramento Republic, San Jose Earthquakes. We also had an FMF scout here that wanted to potentially bring players into a tryout for the youth national team. So a really rewarding experience for the kids in Salinas and the wider sort of Monterey Bay area in California. So a lot of fun. By the way, the last time that I was doing this type of thing was I was with you this summer in Denver. We were doing our pods from the room when we were at the Nations League final. So, you know, it's been a while since it's weird when you have a new backdrop. It just feels a little foreign to me, but it's good to know that you were the last person to experience this with me. So.
Absolutely, brother. I do love the fact that that last time was I was also in a hotel room. You were in a hotel room, and we weren't actually that far away physically, but digitally, yeah. We had to show that we were. The magic of technological advances in 2021. By the way, great work that Fox Soccer Ventures and Alianza de Football are doing right now, promoting and not just that, but engaging with the Hispanic community. That's how you strengthen the U.S. program by really diversifying all the talent that is around this great big country. So well done there, HP. All right, Heath Pierce, let's move on to European club competition. What a weekend once again. When is it when we say that? But really, this one, as we continue with the narratives of manager transition, of course, we've seen plenty in the Premier League, and there is one more, and it's a big one. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is out. He is out at Manchester United after suffering a really embarrassing loss against Watford and Claudio Ranieri. By the way, throughout this whole conversation, you got to tip your hat off to Claudio Ranieri and Watford for doing that, by the way, and making sure that they get the win in such an emphatic way. But regardless, OGS is out. Before we get into potential candidates, and by the way, on Monday morning, we'll have our usual dose of Fabrizio Romano who'll break it down for us. Let's talk about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer right now. Heath, first of all, are you surprised? Should it have happened way before the international break? Or what are you thinking about this exit?
Yeah, this is one where the sort of writing's on the wall. And I actually give credit to Manchester United on this one, because a lot of times these coaches will, you see it where they get this vote of confidence and then the coaches will wait until something major like a transfer window or something like that to get rid of a coach and make a change. And obviously we know the transfer window is coming soon. But the fact that they went through all of this, they had these rough patches. Then there was the talk of the two games or the three games where it was tough to really judge to see the right one. I think people were still leaning towards, hey, you're only as good as your last game. For them to go out of this one, and obviously Watford especially, no disrespect to Watford or Ranieri, it's an unbelievable performance in this one. But that's when you have to be able to say, okay, if you can't get up for this game, if you can't get a win with the team you put on the field against the Watford, who have been pretty poor to start the season, then it's time to go. You have to know that. And again, I don't think one incident is ever how it isolates the change of a manager. I think they had the plan and they were like, well, if this gets too bad or if we get embarrassed, hopefully in the background, they've been doing the work to see who the next manager is going to be. Obviously, there's some big names popping up. But yeah, I actually give credit for Manchester United on this one of understanding when to rip the Band-Aid off, because there's never a perfect time, because you come out of this one, maybe they bounce back and get a great win in the Champions League. They don't have the easiest run of games coming up. But yeah, certainly respect to Manchester United to understand, because it's hard to fire a legend. We see that in Italy all the time. Legend goes to the club, they get fired like five games later, no one cares. But in the Premier League, it's a little bit harder to do that. I mean, maybe Chelsea set the standard with Lampard, but it certainly seemed like after a loss like that, it was time to make a change. I mean, want to get your take on that and sort of what you've been reading, what you're seeing. Kind of what did you think this was the right time? What should it, could it have been a month earlier or 2 months? I mean, in retrospect, I think it could. But you go back 2 months earlier, is it going to solve that? Would things be different now? Maybe, maybe not. But there's certainly a number of players that I think are going to benefit from some just fresh life within the club as soon as they hire, well, going from an interim or to a full-time manager.
Yeah. Let me just say some good points there and a good question to end it there, HP. I got to say that this is always going to be a tricky situation. The moment that he entered into this day, number one, because he is a legend as a player and everything that he gave to this club. You mentioned Lampard and Chelsea. Of course, there's a similar narrative here as well. I will say this, you know, first of all, I think that this should have happened a long time ago. I was going back into some video clips, some analysis that we were doing on CBS Sports. And I remember one clip, I went on CBS Sports HQ after they lost to Istanbul Beşiktaş, and I basically said the same thing. I'm not the only one. Many people have said, we have seen the writing on the wall for a long time. I think that this just should have happened before the international break. They already lost 5-0 to Liverpool. That already in itself, I don't care how good Liverpool are, it was the manner in which they lost. And it wasn't just that loss. It's just on countless times we have seen how OGS has really
disappointed. Yeah, but you know who also lost 5-0 to Liverpool? You know who also lost 5-0 to Liverpool? Watford did.
Yeah.
And then Watford went and battered Manchester United. It's a really weird world that we're living in, by the way. Sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to point that out.
No. It's a good point, but I got to say something here. I mean, there's a difference when you have Harry Maguire, Paul Pogba, Mason Greenwood, Cristiano Ronaldo, Jadon Sancho, and then you have Watford, a team that's just newly been promoted to the Premier League. It's not the same comparison. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a good man. He's a good person. You see it from his interview that he did and his exit. I am not denying any of that. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is part of the rot of Manchester United. He is not the rot itself. There's a major issue in there. It's directionless. It has no vision. And there is no direct real lead. You saw it in the protests in the Super League from the, you know, against Joe Glazer, etc. There's already a rot in itself. Cristiano Ronaldo coming in was a band-aid over a gunshot wound. This is a Manchester United that is in complete disarray.
I don't even know if that was a band-aid. I think if anything, that was the probably the straw that broke the camel's back, because while they had a number of signings, when I look at a Van de Beek, when I look at a Jadon Sancho, when I look at a number of these players coming in, by the way, that comment had just mentioned that Van de Beek, the last one to score before.
Yeah.
But you look at all those pieces and you get hopeful that there's something that you can build in a team there. But then when I look at it, I'm like, okay, well, you have – as soon as Ronaldo came, I thought that was the biggest thing. And maybe I personally, if I'm Ole Gunnar, I don't see Ole Gunnar being one that was like, yes, I need Ronaldo, knowing the magnitude of which bringing a player in like that was. I understand Manchester United's reason of not letting him to go to Manchester City. I understand this is a legend, bringing that legend home. But at the same time, you've thrown off the whole dynamic that actually had some bubbling potential last year coming into this year, and the way that Bruno Fernandes, you know, we talked about Mason Greenwood needing to have a huge year this year. We saw a few glimpses before Ronaldo arrived, and then that balance was all thrown off. Jadon Sancho not having a spot in the team, Jesse Lingard not having a spot in the team, Marcus Rashford not being able to have a spot in the team, Anthony Martial. I mean, you look at this, and I compare them to look how many options that Chelsea has, but they found a way to rotate, and it doesn't feel when Chelsea rotates that it's a bad thing. It's a good thing. And yes, they don't have Lukaku now, so they're rotating more than usual. But Manchester United never seemed like they were rotating, right? It was like early days of almost Frank Lampard-esque of like tinkering. And I know Tuchel's known for tinkering as well, but getting the most out of those players, where I felt we'd get a sample size of Jadon Sancho for a half and go, okay, he's not good. You get a Van de Beek in a poor run of form and you go, okay, he's not good. He can't play in my team. And then same thing, you go with those injuries, and it just seemed like there was never really a plan that once Ronaldo actually came it just seemed almost like the perfect excuse for it to fail. And it seems like, you know, they were moving in the right direction. That was a tough position to be in. I blame Manchester United for bringing in Ronaldo. He's obviously phenomenal, one of the greatest players ever. It's not a disrespect to him. But the dynamic of the team, the development of the team, the plan, where you were going seemed a lot clearer then than it is now. And he's a one-stop shop, right? He could be a year in and a year out. And I just don't see, you know, while he's there, that this team's able to sort of go to the next generation that seemed like they were going to. So, yeah, I just wanted to point that out in terms of not being a Band-Aid. I thought, if anything, maybe they thought it would be a Band-Aid to solve a short-term issue, but they had to think bigger than that. Somebody of this magnitude was going to come in and certainly kind of disrupt the equilibrium of the team. Not by his own fault of his own, but this is one of the greatest players ever. So what do you think is going to come in when you bring him into the club?
Yeah, which is my point, right? There is so many more rotting factors in Manchester United that I just... A few things, by the way. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's tenure was not completely in disarray. He did set an English record of 29 matches unbeaten. He led to successive top four finishes consecutively as well, but also wasn't able to secure a first trophy since 2017. And to be honest, as we have said in this show over and over again, there was just no identity. It's just been very, very tough. By the way, as I mentioned, Fabrizio Romano will join the show this week on Monday as our usual dose, and we will talk about the potential candidates, which include Zinedine Zidane, Eric Ten Hag, Brendan Rodgers, even Luis Enrique is in that fold. But, you know, there's a difference between what will happen at the summer and trying to find directly an interim manager to replace the interim manager that is Michael Carrick right now. Final thoughts here, Heath Pierce, before we move on.
Yeah, just on the coaching search, I just think about the type of coach or manager you need, and I just don't see, and again, I'm being biased to this, but you have a natural-born winner in Zinedine Zidane, somebody who's done it at a huge club under immense amounts of pressure, knows how to get the most out of his players, tends to get the most out of his players, but also makes it very clear when players are not in his form, right? Gareth Bale being an example of somebody who he tried to move on. He didn't want to move because, you know, loving his quality of life and the good golf you can get in Spain, but made it very clear that it just seems like players knew their role and knew what they meant to Zinedine Zidane. When I think about somebody who doesn't have ties to the club, there's no bias there, but it could also kind of be an ego in the room that could be respected and a plan that's bought into. I just don't see how you don't try to break the bank for somebody like that. Considering
has never managed in England, though, Heath Pierce. Is that a problem? Never managed in England. He's learning English right now, that we know that much. Emmanuel Petit did say that he's learning English because he's obviously seeing it, but never managed in the Premier League. Does that matter to you at all?
I think it matters, but, you know, Pep Guardiola didn't struggle to come in too when he got carte blanche. I think he has that type of managerial skill. And if anything, England has the most egos of anywhere. You talk about Barcelona is a little bit different because it's supposed to be an ego-free environment. But the Galacticos, I mean, these are the biggest players in the world and they're known for that. So for me, I just think that the league is going to be harder. The scheduling is going to be harder. The competition is going to be harder. The style of play is going to be harder. You know, getting points against a Watford or a Norwich are going to be very different than the way in which teams try to get points at the bottom of La Liga. But I do think that he has the ability to sort of bring that fighting spirit mentality and get the most out of the players. I think that first and foremost, when you're a person manager, when you're an ego manager like he is, I think that you're very limited to which the leagues in which I think you could be successful. That's my take on that.
So we will see what happens. Obviously, this is a plan for the summer as well. By the way, a call to action to everybody that just joined us. We're talking weekend recap, just ending the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer exit discussion. If you have a comment, please make sure that you throw it right in. And a question, Heath Beers and yours truly would love to bring it up. And even if we don't mention it, our producer, Des Norris, will put it up on the screen. And like and subscribe and post a comment. Thank you so much. So that's it. OGS is out. Manchester United moves on, and we will see how that goes. But let's discuss now the top three club, by the way, who are pulling away in the Premier League. And I really believe now, and I'm sure you do too, Heath, there's a cut above the rest here as Chelsea win, Liverpool win, Man City win. Those three teams at this moment are clearly a cut above the rest. My first question to you, Heath, here is, who feels more confident at this point? By the end of this weekend, you got a really good win against Arsenal from a Liverpool side. Chelsea took care of business early on Saturday against Leicester City. And Manchester City as well took care of business against albeit a poor so far Everton. Who feels more confident right now?
Oh, man, I feel like that's a loaded question in terms of confidence. These teams are all firing for their own reasons, right? Chelsea are just so good and so efficient. It's like they know exactly who they are as an identity. Man City do as well. I think Man City are probably the least confident, I would say. Still very confident. But when I look at Liverpool, just the way in which Liverpool, if you give Liverpool a half chance, we'll call it a clear chance, right? Not making something out of nothing. But if you give them a half chance, they will punish you every single time. The lead up, the transition, the first pass, the second. If it takes them seven passes to score, every one of those seven passes is incredible and it's perfect and it's world class. And then the final ball and the finish, it's just guiding. Like everything is a step faster than the other team. And I think that's a really hard thing to bet against right now. When I think of Chelsea, though, I just think about the fact that it's not that same type of rhythm, but it's very good and it's just full of identity. And that identity, I think, has a lot more of a foundation to rely upon. Where if you lose some of those players, we saw with Liverpool, if Chelsea go through the number of players that they're going through right now, no Lukaku, I think they're going to be fine. They're going to be good. However, if they don't, I think Chelsea will be fine. Liverpool, on the other hand, if we were to lose a bunch of these players, I think that that is a situation where, you know, Liverpool fall apart. We saw a number of and I don't think anybody should go through the amount of injuries that Liverpool had last season. I don't expect them to, but a Liverpool side going through some injuries could throw them out of this rhythm that makes them so good. I think there's a rhythm to Liverpool. There's a world-class capability to Liverpool. When you compare that to Chelsea, Chelsea is a machine. Chelsea is an engine. It's built well. It's built to sustain. It's built to withstand differences in the lineup. It's built to withstand sort of scheduling, the seasonality of things. So all of that I just feel is a little bit more prime. And then Man City probably fall third in terms of the confidence or the consistency that I think the team can don't just have now, but can rely upon for the whole season.
Absolutely. By the way, if my image is a little bit low res, I apologize. We're just trying to work on it. But if you're listening to the podcast, hey, you get the advantage. You don't even have to watch this. But we'll continue right here. One of the interesting things about these three teams, by the way, Heath Pierce, I noticed as well, is that Liverpool missed key players against Arsenal. Chelsea didn't have Romelu Lukaku. Manchester City didn't have Kevin De Bruyne, etc. And still, they continue to dominate. So it's going to be, for me, the crucial moments, the holiday period, early in January, that to me is going to be the key. Here's another question for you, Heath. Who could crack into this fourth side? I mean, obviously, we talked about West Ham, but they lost against Wolves. Arsenal, of course, lost as well, but Antonio Conte's Tottenham did win against Leeds. Who could crack in that fourth spot?
Man, it is really hard to say. I wouldn't write off West Ham at this point being able to hold that top four spot. In terms of the top three, I don't see anybody catching these top three. Arsenal were on a great run of form, but we're obviously humbled, extremely humbled over the weekend of just sort of realizing that they have a long way to go in terms of consistency. I know it's going to always be a tough game to win in Liverpool for Arsenal, a difficult one. But that's a great question. I mean, I would have said, at one point, Man United, if they could run around the corner, if they could find a system now, you know, if you look at Carrick in the situation, can he find the 11 that's going to lead him? Can you give some life and confidence to Jadon Sancho, who was one of the best players in the world last season? Can you find more out of Van de Beek? Can you find more out of Mason Greenwood? Can you get that spark for those players to play together? I don't think there's an identity at Manchester United, but I certainly think that a change of pace or a change of belief in empowering some of these players could lead to a positive reaction. But when I'm looking at the table right now, you know, Arsenal, Wolves have been great, but I don't really see them having the consistency to break into a top four. Arsenal, I think, are going to continue to kind of rise and level. So I think they're going to finish in a European spot at the form that they're in. Tottenham also get a great result over this weekend. So it's really tough to say. I mean, this is the difference of this year is when I would have looked at seasons past, I would have been like, yeah, but you've got to deal with Leicester City in this one. You've got to deal with Spurs in this one. You got to deal with Man United, who would have been up there already. It's just a different layout so far in the season. When I think about it, just like the top three, and it's more cliche than ever before, is literally depth of squad. If you can rely upon your depth of squad, I think you've got a chance in the top four. And that's where I think a West Ham may fall short. That's where I think an Arsenal, Man United, maybe. It sounds a little cliche to put just the bigger ones, but when you go through this time period through the winter, when you've got a number of games coming out into the spring after the new year, you're going to have to be able to rotate that squad pretty heavily. We're heading to the end of the group stages for the European competitions. When I look at rotation, I'm looking at an Arsenal who aren't playing Europe right now, their ability to manage that as well and really pull out their best team for the games that are necessarily and really have just a few moments. I think that sets them up well for success. But yeah, I mean, what's your take on a top four? Do you think anybody breaks or kicks West Ham out of there?
I don't know. But I do feel that Mikel Arteta's Arsenal will learn from that Liverpool loss. I feel that there are teams around it, specifically Arteta's Arsenal, that can capitalize on learning from that game. I think Liverpool, as you mentioned, and Daniel, thanks for commenting. So he said Liverpool and Bayern Munich are the best teams in Europe. Now, I it would be very difficult for me to disagree. Obviously, Chelsea are very strong in City, but I think there's no shame in losing 4-0 to Liverpool. It's my point. Like, that's how good
they
are.
What do you mean Messi scored? Messi, they don't get to be best in Europe now? Messi scored a goal. PSG is not on your top of your list right now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good old PSG. We'll get to them in a second. But I don't know. I think West Ham, unfortunately, as you mentioned, the problem is the deeper you go into the league, specifically, once again, as I mentioned, the holiday period, you're going to learn as a club that you're going to have to rely not on your best 11 players, but on your 16th player. On your 17th, the people that can maybe make an impact, you know, when there's injuries or something's going on and you need a spark from the 60th minute, that is the key. So you have to look at squad. Arsenal do have that. If they can build a little bit more in January, they could hopefully get that spot. And of course, you can't discount Antonio Conte's Tottenham and see how much of that influence that will be. And a very good point from our producer, Des Norris, by the way, the Africa Cup of Nations that begins in January, that's going to really disrupt a few teams, including Liverpool, of course. Sadio Mane, Mohamed Salah, that's going to be massive. That's going to be very big, Heath. You know, those players heading into the African Cup of Nations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point. When I was talking about the Liverpool injury situation of the way that they went through last year, I mean, consider it the same thing, except you're talking about maybe a more reliable window of time. You're going to be missing Sadio Mane, who's been fantastic, obviously, and then across the board, when you're thinking Mohamed Salah and a number of these players, you're going to have to deal without them. Look, I think Diogo Jota is a fantastic player. I think he was phenomenal, just making Arsenal
good
look
goal
stupid. Fantastic goal. That's one of those goals, by the way, and if anybody didn't see it, go and watch it, where you beat two players, cut back one, and you cut the goalkeeper. And I always thought about those types of goals during my career, that I didn't score, but always wondered, would I have the calm in those situations to know that, like, I can sell it hard enough? Because I was never good at a Cruyff turn or a cut or any of that sort of stuff where you can sell it and players bite. Like, his ability to do that and keep control of it and just put it away, and he smacks it with pace, I think it's just such a phenomenal type of goal. And sure, they're going to have to rely upon him and Bobby Firmino, obviously. But I just, again, those are two players that are carrying your team right now, right? They are playing out of their minds. They're playing at the best they've ever played in their career. They're doing it consistently, and to lose them, you know, that's where you could find yourself giving up points somewhere along the way. I do worry about that. And that's what probably that in itself leads me to thinking maybe Chelsea are the ones that are probably have the ability to be a little bit more consistent in the machine that they built.
Absolutely. And obviously that's proven so forth with the Premier League tables. Chelsea lead with 21 points, Man City 26, and Liverpool 25. All right, let's move on, because we did, part of our weekend preview was about these new managers coming in to these other teams: Aston Villa, Norwich, Newcastle United, and Watford, technically, because Ranieri is still technically the new manager there, of course, and Antonio Conte with Tottenham. None of them lost. All of them, bar one, won. One of them forced an exit from a manager. But let's just put it all together and give me your thoughts here. Aston Villa, Steven Gerrard's tenure, a really impressive win against Brighton. Brighton, there's no surprises why they are in the top half of the table. This was always going to be a difficult game. And Villa wins 2-0. Norwich and Dean Smith come back from behind to win that as well. And Watford, we mentioned, of course, with that emphatic 4-1 win against Manchester United. And Tottenham coming back from behind to beat Leeds United as well. Anything, what stuck out for you when you're thinking about all those teams?
I mean, honestly, for me, the thing that stuck out the most is the Norwich win. To come from behind, they got punched in the face very early on. This is a team that I think was not built well for the Premier League, and one that looked like, okay, what could Daniel Farke do? What could he do with this team, right? Obviously, he helped build it, We're talking about a sustainable club that lives off of a very different budget than the rest of the league. And you just go, well, you know, they're built for the championship, kind of an elevator team. But to see them now get punched in the face very early on and then press hard to win that ball back, to get the goal, to draw level, was just a response that you want. You know, when you talk about having a new manager and that sort of breath of fresh air, it makes a big difference. And that was one that really stood out to me over the week. And just thinking that it'd be really easy with the form that they've been in to just take that punch to the face and then just sort of like wilt away over the rest of the game, knowing that you have so far to go to try to score a goal. Your team doesn't know how to score goals. Your team doesn't know how to defend. But to be able to get a win like that, I think is a huge testament to Dean Smith. Obviously, a guy that, you know, we talked about some of these managers having coached in 15 months coming into a job. Well, this is one where he got, what, 4 days off or something, 2 days maybe before he took
He came to New York.
It came from an international break and a little bit of vacation to take on a new job and motivate his team. I think that's a really important factor for me. And obviously, I think Aston Villa, you know, what's your take on the Aston Villa sort of just the energy around the team? I didn't get a chance to see the match, obviously watch the highlights, but what was your take on the arrival there?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very good win. I mean, listen, Brighton, again, as I mentioned, this is a very good side managed by Graham Potter. It's not a shocking why they're ninth right now in the table. And Steven Gerrard, you know, went into this saying, listen, he said a message for the entire squad. We don't have to, obviously, we want to win, but the most important thing is we will not give them any loss. We cannot concede. We have to fight for everything. And that's exactly what they did. Brighton loved to have the ball. It was over 60% possession. But then towards the end, Villa pushed and pushed and pushed. And Ollie Watkins got a great goal. And so happy for Tyrone Mings to get his goal there as well. And, you know, 3 points on his first win. And to, you know, stop the bleeding, that was five straight losses, you know, because that was psychologically affecting the club so much. So it was massive. By the way, I didn't mention Newcastle, who are the only team right now in the Premier League without a win still. They did show a lot of resiliency against Brentford, but it was 3-3 in the end on that one. And I'm just looking at the table here, Heath Pierce, and the difference in
that
points.
Was, by the way, before you say that, the problem for me with Newcastle was that they're playing a Brentford that I think has also lost 4 or 5 straight. And it was a real opportunity for them to be able to win that. Again, you talk about response, new manager, bounce back, you know, kind of stabilizing. Mm. It feels like a chance wasted for me. Sorry.
No. Great point. The only thing I wanted to add was I'm glad Des Norris brings it up, because look at that. The difference between relegation, 9 points, and 10th is 7 points. 7 points. And we're just in November right now. And my point is that things can turn around very quickly for a lot of clubs. So I wouldn't lose any faith, and at the same time, wouldn't completely feel too confident if I'm so high up. I mean, Everton, for example, you know, who are continue to go on a pretty bad form. So it's a very, very tight bottom of the table for the Premier League. So it's going to be intriguing how we continue this one. Before we take a break, any thoughts from the Premier League here, Heath Pierce? Antonio Conte wrapped it up and Tottenham as they beat Leeds United. We talked about Everton. Anything else that we missed out before we take a break?
No, just a fantastic goal again from our boy Raul for Wolves.
Raul Jimenez, a fantastic finish.
Yeah. Obviously, we're just glad. I'm just glad he didn't have that when he was in the international break. Goes back to his club, just continues to show the quality that he has. And Wolves being sort of sneaky good at the moment. I don't know what their sort of last run of form is. I know they've only lost, 6th place. Again, another team that I think is probably not getting the respect they deserve, sitting between Arsenal and Spurs in the table. But just a shout out to them as they continue to, even though they haven't been the pretty side that we expect them, obviously getting Jimenez back into the team. And they play a really fun and attractive style of play. And to do that and get results is pretty cool.
Yes, since September 18th, they've only lost once. So it's pretty impressive from Wolverhampton Wanderers, of course, as they are you know, looking pretty good in the top half of the table. We're going to take a break, everybody. If you're listening to this on audio, that means a quick break. Then we come back. But on YouTube Live, we keep on rolling. Heath Pierce joining me here. Qué golazo. Weekend recap. We'll be right back.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Hey, everybody. I told you we will be back straight away if you're watching on YouTube. And here we are, HP. Qué golazo weekend recap. And let's discuss the rest of Europe. And Heath, I want to go to France, unfortunately, because once again, we have problems that have nothing to do with the game itself. Lyon and Marseille abandoned after Payet was struck with a water bottle. He, you know, refused to come back in because he was injured, obviously hit by a water bottle. By the way, that's 3 out of 7 of Marseille's away games in Ligue 1 this season. I've seen at least one of their players struck by a projectile by an opposing fan. What was even more worrying about this one was that obviously Marseille players refused to leave the locker room despite the fact that the referee, Rudy Bouquet, ordering them to come back because he wanted to come back in the game. This is just a continuation of something that's really, really polluting the French game. I don't know the stats yet, but I'm sure our friend Jonathan Johnson can help out later on. But we have just seen too many of these situations in Ligue 1, and enough is enough. There is no communication between the official, the local authorities, and the league itself. There is a clear target on Marseille's back, but it's not just them. It happens everywhere. Where is the leadership? A good friend, Jonathan Johnson, obviously tweeted about the fact that there needs to be a restructuring. There needs to be some young blood that comes in into the executive decision-making here for Ligue 1, because this cannot go on. If you continue to allow this to happen, Ligue 1, something terrible will happen. More than projectiles. Somebody will really get hurt, and I hate to say it, but somebody could die in a moment like this. It's too much. It's too dangerous. It's too volatile, and this is not what the game should be about. It's unbelievable. What's your pick on this? What's your take on this, Heath Pierce? Because there's a real problem in French football.
Yeah, you know, a couple of years ago, I attended a Marseille-Lyon match, and Lyon won at home. Lyon won away from home, and there was an away ban of all of the fans, right? So the whole stadium at the Velodrome was Marseille fans. And you hear the story of the history is deeply rooted in sort of Marseille, again, being this birthplace of immigration into Europe. And then Lyon, which is considered a much more traditional and French, kind of more a national pride of their history type of town in terms of blue collar, in terms of social classes. And so there's all of this sort of tension between these clubs that are based on history. And then you have the young people and things that happen now. And we like to glorify, you know, these types of things, water bottles being thrown on when things get thrown on the field. We talk about the passion and how it's like hostility and this is environment. But then as soon as we've started to see this more, we saw it in the Nations League, players getting actually hit with things, right? We know when you go down to Azteca or some of these other nations, you know, I've been hit by coins. I've been hit by lighters. It certainly kind of gets into your head, but none of it is like hit with, we're starting to see just like vitriol in these things. It used to be, you know, throw your beer cup on the field and they come clean up the beer cups, or, you know, the ribbons that they would throw or whatever, the threading they'd throw behind the goalkeeper and his feet would get stuck in it when he's kicking a goal kick and they sweep it all off. But now it's sort of, it's just continuing And it's, I don't know that there needs to be stronger ramifications that go into this, right? In terms of lifetime bans from stadiums for these incidents, and really make it clear and create accountability. Don't just ban away fans, but really actually trying to put the hammer down.
Suspend the whole weekend. Yeah. Suspend the whole weekend of action. Blanket punishment. Even if you're a completely different fixture, suspend the entire thing. Because this is a league problem, and league needs to hold itself accountable. And obviously, you know, it's not every single club, but the only way to try and stop a poisonous snake is to cut off the head. You have to suspend the entire thing, because I'm telling you, this is going to keep happening, and something worse than just being hit by a water bottle will happen. And then
you ban away fans. You ban away fans, right? Because of the violence in and around the stadiums. And there's a lot of innocent people that end up getting injured or hurt. They light off some of these, they throw these M1000 fireworks at each other there that kind of explode and actually have real danger, like weapon level danger. And you ban those, but then you don't create a safe environment for the away fans inside of a stadium, because the home fans are not doing things a certain way. And so it's a really difficult thing to choose, until you're going to start teams that start getting hit financially, teams that start getting bans or points docked for certain things. That's when we start to see people shape up. And otherwise you allow sort of the rambunctious bunch and a few bad apples to ruin the experience for a lot of people. And this is sort of the polarization of the world now. As you look at it and you go, well, you know, Lyon fans must be bad people, because look at what's happening. But it's really just in minority, and the same thing that we have some of the chants in North America. You just have bits and pieces of people that are potentially ruining or are ruining an experience for fans, right? Not just the danger and safety of the players on the field, but if you're a kid that gets the chance to go to a game like that, and you, that's what you experience and that's what you see. I mean, I have a feeling that would start to ruin your love for the sport itself. And I just think that's something that needs to be sort of taken under control and have harsher punishments than, you know, canceling or delaying a game and things like that. You just need to start to make it financial. And I know they've done financial stuff before, but then make it more financial, and then make it even bigger in terms of point deductions, to where the fans are going to have to decide, or the stadiums or clubs are going to have to decide, we're going to either have fans or we're not. If fans aren't going to shape up, then, you know, let's keep them out.
Yep, absolutely. Well said. But this obviously will not go away, but throw in your comments, of course, and questions, and we will try to get to it either in this episode or the next. Let's move on and let's talk about Serie A, which is super exciting. 29 goals in 8 matches this weekend. By the way, Serie A exclusively on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports. Inter Milan with a 3-2 win against Napoli. Napoli's defeat of the season, by the way. Dries Mertens squanders a golden opportunity in that one, and Inter Milan in injury time, and Inter Milan take full advantage. And by the way, I would imagine that in some way, you know, AC Milan is probably thankful as well, because now this race becomes a little tighter, but amazing. As we speak, I believe Roma, unless it's over, Des Norris, 18-year-old sub Felix Afenagian reigns on Shevchenko's debut, and so does the rain. Apparently, it was a pretty wet game. Yeah, that's a 2-0 win for Mourinho's Roma against Shevchenko's Genoa. Juventus beat Lazio. Fiorentina put 4 past AC Milan. Quite an entertaining weekend. What a big win, by the way, going back to the beginning there, Heath Pierce, as Inter Milan beat Napoli.
There are no more undefeated teams in Serie A. It's over. It was a nice run for AC Milan. AC Milan was an example of one. By the way, Zlatan had 2 goals in their loss to Fiorentina. He had 1 hit off the crossbar that turned into an own goal for them. He had 1 earlier on in the game called back for an offside that he absolutely buried. He is just a phenomenal specimen and player. But Fiorentina were just ruthless in this one. And this is the problem with
AC Milan. I was going to say, I see your Zlatan, but I raise you a Dusan Blahovic. I mean, this kid is the business. Our friend Fabrizio was mentioning how if Fiorentina ever were to sell him, it's a 70 million euro sell. And I'm telling you, that's a bark. 21 years old. And he reminds me of another Fiorentina legend in Batistuta, and the way that he finishes. Unbelievable. This guy, by the way. But carry on, my friend. There was a very big win for Fiorentina.
Yeah, huge win for Fiorentina. They were ruthless in front of goal, chances that they created. AC Milan were so poor in defense. And when I looked at that, I started to think a little bit, and we talked about this, that AC Milan really needed to create a gap with Napoli at the top over Inter Milan. Now that's a three-horse race. And that, I think there's, I can't remember the exact numbers, but maybe 5-point gap still there.
Napoli on 32 points, Milan on 32 points as well. Inter Milan now 28, but Atalanta, who also got a very big win as well, they got 25. Roma 22, Lazio 21 after losing to Juventus, Fiorentina, and Juve as well, all on 21. So it's pretty tight. But that horse race that you were talking about, Napoli and Milan even on 32, and Inter Milan on 28.
Yeah, and AC Milan for much of that game had so many clear chances to capitalize and finish. Obviously, Fiorentina capitalized on a goalkeeping error. I'm not sure if it was the first or second goal. Goalkeeper drops it. It's a poke, and I think it was the first goal of the game. A real demoralizer for them, but continued to give up goals. Defensively, super poor. But I don't want to take away Fiorentina's performance. Obviously, they were ruthless. When they had chances, they brought them to a conclusion. They scored those goals. They were fantastic, phenomenal goals. But one where now when you're AC Milan and you're looking at the table, it just gets a little bit tighter right now. And we saw them hit that dip in form again around this time last year where Inter started to sort of round the corner themselves. And I fear that it's got the makings of that all over again. But Napoli and Milan now, suffering their first losses of the season. It's just a big swing of things, so to speak, in Serie A.
Yeah, Napoli, by the way, was the last undefeated team in Europe's top five leagues. So, you know, that's a big one there. And as you mentioned, of course, the horse race gets tighter. Let's move on to La Liga. Xavi off to a winning start there. I think we all predicted this in the preview. It was going to be a win. It wasn't going to be emphatic, maybe a little dubious, including that penalty, of course. But, you know, 3 points are 3 points. And at this point, that's really all that matters for Barcelona. He had a very young team, 2 17-year-olds in that first 11, by the way. You can clearly see that he wants to rely on philosophy and talent. And for him, age right now is absolutely secondary. But, you know, Xavi should be happy, HB, for at least getting those 3 points, even though if it was a dubious pen against Espanyol.
Yeah, if you go back to all the history of Barcelona and when La Masia became something famous, right? That was the foundation that they built everything on. And then as the pressure grew, La Masia became different. They weren't generating the same talent. They weren't rising to the pressures and challenges. They were losing players to other academies after spending time in La Masia. Carlos Puyol being one who was very outspoken about it not being the same. He was taking players to Man City's academy and other places like that. I think this is a really smart and strategic move to winning the fans back at Barcelona to really set the precedent that, hey, this isn't about today. This isn't about tomorrow. This is about, one, accepting our financial situation. This is, two, going back to the foundation and groundwork of which this club was built. And that's around young players coming through, part of this philosophy, part of this belief system. You know, I don't remember if you saw that Barcelona documentary where Thierry Henry talks about how he didn't understand the style of play there, and that they talked about how a number of players coming from the outside in didn't understand the roots of the club and what it meant and the style of play and everything that goes with that culturally. And I think Xavi going to young players, I think, is a sign or a waving of a sign that there's an intent to sort of reset that foundation. And I think it also, when you play young players, you have the excuse. This was my thing about Koeman, is you have that excuse on your advantage. Play the young players. Talk about we're rebuilding. Talk about this youth that are so incredible. We've got potential world-class talent. Like, don't talk about the fact that you're missing your older players aren't performing or you don't have money or debt. I just think from a media standpoint and winning the fans back, there's just such a strong narrative and story there to giving opportunities back to your academy players again, players that are coming up, and win those fans back with that fight. Let those players.
Ajax do it. Man City does it. Man City did it today. Brought in some. Ajax literally lives of that. And to your point, Barcelona did exactly that as well. And by the way, Atletico Madrid also won, but with Sevilla tying, they tied Alaves, and Real Sociedad in a stalemate as well against Valencia. Real Madrid took full advantage as they continued their good run under Carlo Ancelotti. 4-1 against Granada. Goals from Asensio, Nacho, Vinicius Jr., of course, and Mendy as well. So that means, Heath Pierce, Real Madrid are top of La Liga. Will that keep?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I mean, Sevilla was certainly a setback, but I just don't see anybody. I don't see anybody in the current form that teams are in or what I can see from them being able to go punch for punch till the end of the season with Real Madrid. And maybe you feel Sevilla could do that. Maybe Atletico Madrid get into a run of form where they can go, you know, they're a team that could go 20 games unbeaten, just scrapping out. But we see they've been a little bit more leaky than they usually are, giving up more chances and matches than they usually do. And so it's hard for me to imagine another team. It seems like one of those years that Real Madrid is like, well, since nobody else wants it, we'll go and take it.
Right.
And they're going to give up points along the way. They're an aging squad as well. We're seeing some of their young players also come to life this season. But it's hard for me to imagine, looking at the teams, the form of the teams now, what that form could be without a number of signings within any of these clubs, that anyone's going to be able to not just hold on to what Real Madrid are doing, because I do think they will, but to surpass that is a pretty tall order in a season like this.
Yeah, and Real Madrid lead with 30 points, Real Sociedad 29, Sevilla 28, and Atletico Madrid 26. All four of those have only lost once. So it's very, very tight indeed. But Real Madrid take the top pole right there in La Liga. All right. Well, listen, everybody. This is your last chance to ask us some questions, because we're about to give you our final thoughts. A lot was going on, by the way, specifically, you know, with Messi. You mentioned he scored his first goal in Ligue 1 as PSG won 3-1 against Nantes. Another costly defeat for Jesse Marsch. He appears as Hoffenheim beats Leipzig 2-0. The MLS playoffs, Philadelphia against Red Bulls, a terrible game, but the goal was ridiculous. And Philadelphia go through there. Sporting KC, of course.
123rd minute, 120 plus three.
Unbelievable.
Literally going to penalties. It was 3 minutes of stoppage time of extra time, and he hit the banger to put them through, which is a pretty incredible thing. Yeah. And this guy is becoming known. Jacob Glesnes is becoming known for only scoring as a defender, only scoring bangers, and he hits that one in clutch fashion. It's amazing.
It was ridiculous. And NYCFC continue their good form, by the way, probably because of that great hype video from our friend Ian Poljoy, as they beat Atlanta United 2-0, and now they will meet New England Revolution. That's going to be a great, great game. It was a comedy goal for Tati Castellanos. But it's been that kind of season for Tati Castellanos, just scoring in any way possible. Refs against NYCFC, Heath Pierce. That's a big one. But any final thoughts? You can stay with MLS. We can go anywhere you want, because we also have the Timbers, Minnesota on Monday, as well as Nashville, Orlando, and Sounders against Real Salt Lake. But anything else that you want to mention, final thoughts before we say goodbye?
No, actually.
Who are you saying goodbye to?
I have a late checkout today here.
And they just told you have to go?
They just came in to clean the room, which was amazing. I wish they would have called in. You know, it's like classic. I was like, I could hear it. If I had headphones on, though, I would have no idea what was going on right now. But yeah, they
there'll
just
be something
out
in the background the whole time.
Yeah. Now I'm a little bit flustered. You know, I'm like, oh man, what's going on here? But I think again, Jesse Marsch is an interesting one. When I looked at Jesse Marsch, I was like, man, is he back under the watchful eye of the club again? And I think they're, and I don't know if you have the Bundesliga table in front of you, but they're in sixth place. So they've crept back up, and with a loss to Bayern Munich losing on Friday, and then Dortmund winning over the weekend, they're now only 1 point apart at the top of the table.
And that's right.
And after the sort of average or poor run of form with RB Leipzig, I think they've jumped up the top six and are just a few points out of being in that conversation again, 4 or 5 points out of that sort of top four or European positions in the Bundesliga, which is really interesting.
SC
Freiburg. Yeah. Freiburg again, sort of what I think will start to level out. Wolfsburg as well in that conversation. But yeah, Leipzig on 18 points in seventh place, and just, I guess that would be 3 points out of fourth. So not terrible for them. And then this week, next week, Bayern take on Dortmund. And after a loss for Bayern, it just seems like the perfect time for Bayern. And Marco Reus continues to be sort of ageless for Bayern, for Dortmund, scoring a goal again this weekend and sort of carrying their team through this tough time without Haaland. And again, when you think about Haaland, you think about Dortmund, a team that literally cannot win without him. They've now found a way to win and continue to get results despite him not being on the field. And actually even gives me this idea of like, man, it might be time to move him on, because the team can still get results without him and he's worth a fortune. So why not just go for it at a certain point? But yeah, those are my closing thoughts. Always love to touch on the Bundesliga a little bit. And Bayern, I think that was Bayern's second loss of the season. That's now keeping that title race alive for Dortmund.
Yep, they've lost twice, but they still lead by 1 point above Dortmund, as you mentioned. My only thing is, make sure that you check out our sister podcast, Attacking Third, as of course the Washington Spirit win their first ever NWSO Championship title. Trinity Rodman, by the way, what a player. But all the comments, all the analysis that you want is on attacking third. But Trinity Rodman, Heath Pierce, is quite the star, huh?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at highlight reels, you always see them and you see the jersey of the opponent changing when you build a reel. But she literally built a highlight reel in the final of this tournament, just crushing people. And the speed and pace and the skill that she has, it was phenomenal and an unbelievable win for the Washington Spirit.
Yep, and Attacking Third has all the content that you need. All right, before we say goodbye, check it out. This Nara show is that schedule that we have for the remain of the week. Fabrizio Romano and his transfer notes. This is about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and so much more. That's on Monday. Heath Pierce and Jimmy Conrad will return on the US MNT Hour. That's live at 4:15 Eastern. We have a great preview that we're coming out with as well. Not live. For the Champions League, match day 5, and then our recap, of course, on Tuesday and Wednesday, and, of course, our weekend preview. That's coming out a little later on Friday, of course, due to Thanksgiving. I will not be here, but you're in good hands with Jimmy, Heath, et cetera, and everybody else. And then, of course, live weekend recap as well. So this is a busy week of action once again. Thank you so much for being part of the family. Heath Pierce, thank you so much, brother.
No, thank you for having me. I'm glad I got a chance to catch up with you. I'm glad you're wrapping this up before they actually pull me and drag me out of this chair out of the hotel or start.
Your room is clean, though, at least, huh?
Yeah.
His room is clean, but Heath Pierce, make sure that you get home safe. We got a busy week ahead of us, everybody. Follow Qué Golazo on Twitter, Qué Golazo Pod. Subscribe to Qué Golazo wherever you listen to your pods. And of course, leave us a glowing review if you can. YouTube.com/ Qué Golazo, CBS Sports and your CBS Sports app. Have a great rest of your evening, and we will see you very, very soon. See you next time.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.